of the Wednesday edition? Question mark, Dominic. How you doing, little buddy?
I am awesome, Crudy, Evan, Fancy Brian, our fair audience. Welcome. It's a pleasure to join you. She stands by her story, Crudy. She stands by her story.
You're talking about Cassidy Hutchinson, the very compelling testimony yesterday, the blockbuster of a J6 surprise, surprise, surprise hearing. Dom, it had me captivated. It had Brett Baer over at Fox News captivated. But I turned on the radio this morning. Big mistake. You know, unless you're listening to Devil Radio or The Shaw. Those are
all right. Great, thanks for that clarification, man.
Great programming choices. But I listened to Righty Whitey talk radio this morning.
Got to get a flavor, man.
And in Madison, in Milwaukee, there is this juggernaut, WISN, WIBA. They're the whitey, rightiest of all the talk outlets in the great state. Although there's some up north trying hard.
Oh, yes.
But Dan O'Donnell, this young lawyer turned radio host, he's out there attacking the witness, you know, basically being the cross-examination that never happened. And he thinks he found her in some credibility blunders, you know, what she said could not possibly be true on this singular point, I think. Maybe he thought he had two. And therefore, the entirety of the testimony is not credible. Let's throw it all out. You never saw it. It never happened.
Yeah, good luck with that. Were you convinced by Whitey Ready Talk Radio's response, retort, rebuttal, cross-examination?
You know, I would say this. If I was uninformed, if I hadn't watched it, if I was only sourcing the information, my entire interpretation of what happened yesterday from what Clan O'Donnell had to say today, he might have convinced me. He might have convinced me because, of course, I'd have this confirmation bias in the first place. I'd want him to tell me that she wasn't credible because what was she saying about the president yesterday, Dom? There's some pretty damning charges against the man, including the fact that he knew the crowd was armed.
Yes.
Heavily armed.
Didn't care. They're not after me.
With that.
He didn't want to do anything. He thinks Mike deserves it. The people didn't do anything wrong. Let the people in. Let them come closer to the stage. Yeah. There was some damning testimony yesterday. Were any of right-wing talk radio's response or retorts regarding those very specific and egregious issues that Trump knew?
Something more important, like what was Trump's conduct in the limousine? And was it a limousine?
Was it ketchup or was it some other sauce?
Ketchup. You know, ketchup or catch-up? Let me read a bit here.
Inquiring minds want to know.
Drew Harwell at the Washington Post. I don't really want to know. I suspect it's not the John Kerry version.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
His wife's something of a ketchup magnet. But anyways, Trump supporters race to debunk the January 6th testimony. They're out there everywhere. Righty Whitey Talk Radio just lit up with people trying to spin. Then they got confused. The former president's backers quickly spun an online conspiracy theory that he couldn't possibly have lunged for his driver steering wheel on January 6, 2021. When evidence suggested otherwise, they changed tack.
Yeah, of course they did.
Well, if it's not that, then it's got to be something else that's equally unimportant to the nature of the testimony
right.
She gave.
Right. Does it matter that he threw a plate when we're talking about the violent insurrection and attempt to overthrow the government? Does it really matter?
Well, she wasn't in the room. That's a hearsay plate throwing incident.
Yeah, okay. Okay. But she continues to stand by her testimony.
And so many of the conversations were not hearsay.
Right.
They were direct conversations. She was part of the conversation. If you don't know the definition of hearsay, go look it up. You conservatives, it's worth a Google. Anyways, former President Donald Trump supporters online sought to undercut stunning testimony Tuesday to the House Select Committee investigating the J6 insurrection, seeking to belittle Cassidy Hutchinson's claims that she was told Trump had lunged for the steering wheel of his vehicle and attempted to throttle a member of his security detail, choke a bitch, if you will, when they refused to take him to the Capitol as rioters were besieging the building. In sworn testimony, Hutchinson said she heard of the physical altercation from Tony Ornato, a Secret Service agent who served as the White House Deputy Chief of Staff for operations. She said he told the story in front of Bobby Engel, the head of Trump's security detail, at whom Trump reportedly lunged during the altercation. Neither man has testified. "I'm the epic president," she said. Ornato quoted the president shouting as they drove him to the White House away from the Capitol. Trump supporters quickly snapped back online. Oh, they figured it out. Q helped them, I'm sure.
We would have got away with it, too, if it wasn't for these meddling kids.
Trump supporters quickly snapped back online that they'd found an obvious sign she was lying. The presidential limousine, known as the Beast, is so heavily fortified that they argued it would be physically impossible for Trump to cross the back cabin to the driver's seat, especially with his, you know, incapacitations. Have you seen the man? He's old and feeble.
Well, and of course, we cannot forget the bone spurs.
But Dominic, Trump was not riding in his limousine that day. Video show he actually rode in the Secret Service SUV, where the seats are closer together. Even if he had ridden in the Beast, the rear and front seats have a glass window. Well, they call that the partition. Anyone who's ever tried to make it in the back of a limousine knows you roll that thing up, right, Dom?
That's right, baby.
The front seats have a glass window the president can lower whenever he'd like, a detail noted even in the same infographic that Trump supporters shared is proof that Hutchinson's story couldn't be right. Trump made the same argument on Truth Social. You're a member, right, Dom? Join the club, the Truth Social club. The Twitter clone his allies created when he was banned from Twitter following the January 6th attack. "Your fake story is sick and fraudulent," he wrote, adding, "It wouldn't even have been possible to do such a ridiculous thing." But two Secret Service agents who worked in the Beast told the Post that such a move from the president might have been tough, even, given the limo's interior equipment, but not impossible. The quibbling followed an aggressive campaign before the testimony by the pro-Trump commentators on social networks, blogs, and message boards, and Righty Whitey Talk Radio, of course, seeking to portray Hutchinson, an aide to Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows, as an irrelevant attention seeker like you, Dom.
Crudy, the pro-Trump blog Gateway Pundit called Hutchinson another grifter for using Tuesday's show trials audition for a spot on CNN or MSNBC. The conservative firebrand John Cordillo tweeted that she was a glorified receptionist and coffee fetcher at Meadows' office, relaying boring office gossip, acting as if she had more access and input than she ever actually did. But as she recounted stunning details on Tuesday, including in the room and previously unreported accounts of Trump's and Meadows' actions before and during the insurrection, Trump defenders tried a different tack, saying she was just a rumor monger, even though much of her testimony was supported by written notes and text messages, and all of it was made under oath. More than 4,000 accounts liked a tweet from a pro-Trump Twitter account, calling her Amber Heard 2.0, a reference to the actor who recently lost a defamation lawsuit against ex-husband Johnny Depp. By Tuesday night, the phrase Amber Heard 2.0 was trending on Twitter. Trump supporters, including Junior, also widely echoed a right-wing meme suggesting Hutchinson was like Jussie Smollett, the actor who falsely reported to police that he'd been attacked by men screaming, "This is MAGA country." On the pro-Trump message board Patriots Win, one poster said, "She sounds like a child gossiping." Some Patriots.win posters said the testimony showed how unfairly Trump had been treated. One poster said the story showed that the deep state coup plotters of the Secret Service had effectively kidnapped the president of the United States of America against his wishes as part of a CIA military industrial complex coup d'etat. Some there argued she should be locked up for lying under oath, while another poster suggested her wild testimony was just Washington as usual. Even if she's telling the truth, an anonymous poster said, "Where's the effing problem?" No effing problem whatsoever. Just that, you know, your guy, the president who lost the election, knew that his crew was armed, wanted to get the mags out, wanted all those people in. We have some sound of that, Brian. Did you get... So during some of my research and reading today, I came across the Republican Accountability Project at Accountable GOP, and they did a kind of a cut-up mashup here. We have time for this? We'll have to do it afterwards. They went back and get clips of Trump's speech on January 6th. And to them, and we'll play it on the other side of this break, it sure seems that what Hutchison said under oath is backed up by Trump's speech.
But you know, she's just a liberal fancy. And Dom, you know, having just worked for Steve Scalise, Ted Cruz, and Mark Meadows yeah. by the age of 26. You know, just a coffee girl for three of the most prominent conservatives in the nation.
That's some pretty good coffee. Her statement released from her attorney today, Ms. Hutchison stands by all of the testimony she provided yesterday under oath to the Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol.
I like what Adam Kinzinger said on Twitter, the platform that Trump's no longer allowed on. Kinzinger tweeted out, the rep from Illinois, watching the desperation of Trump world to discredit the brave Cassidy Hutchison reminds me of everything Trump does when he's busted and cornered. Know what I'm saying? I'm hoping from your Twitter stream to God's ears. Come back with us. More Devil's Advocate. You can always tweet at us at Devil Radio. Doesn't channel through St. Peter's there. You know, different route. Different route. But it gets to us. Come back, more Devils. Prefer if you use the phone. 844-967-2789.
May we burn, huh?
Lock her up, lock her up.
Fire, fury, and frankly, power.
But she's a witch.
She would not be my first choice, that I can tell you.
When they go low, we get high. The Devil's Advocates.
All right, we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. You can hit us up right now on the phones, 844-967-2789. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, going to join us at the bottom of the hour. Crudy, before we move on, I want to get to that sound if we can. Once again, this is from the Republican Accountability Project. Find them on Twitter at AccountableGOP. Little mashup between Cassidy Hutchison's testimony and Trump's speech. Fancy Brian, if you would, cut number 20.
When we were in the tent behind the stage, he was very concerned about the shot, meaning the photograph that we would get, because the rally space wasn't full.
I turned on today, I looked, and I saw thousands of people here, but you don't see hundreds of thousands of people behind you.
He wanted it full, and he was angry that we weren't letting people through the mags with weapons, what the Secret Service deemed as weapons.
And I'd love to have if those tens of thousands of people would be allowed, the military, the Secret Service, and we want to thank you, and the police, law enforcement, great, you're doing a great job.
Yeah.
But I'd love it if they could be allowed to come up here with us. Is that possible? Can you just let them come up, please?
I was in the vicinity of a conversation where I overheard the president say something to the effect of, you know, I don't even care that they have weapons. They're not here to hurt me. Let them in, let my people in. They can march to the Capitol after the rally's over. They can march from the ellipse. Take the effing mags away.
But all those hundreds of thousands of people back there, move them up, please. Yeah.
Move them up, please. Yeah. He knew what was up. That certainly seems to corroborate exactly what Cassidy Hutchison was saying.
It certainly does. 844-967-2789 will also corroborate with former U.S. Attorney James Santel soon. Commiserate. He is also host of Morning Cannolis, Saturday mornings, 9 to 11. I told Jim, take the 4th of July weekend off. Save it all up for the following week, man. All the cannolis. You know, leave the gun, take the cannolis. So Jim will return to live radio next Saturday morning, but he'll return to the airwaves with us shortly. I'm watching the numbers. You know, I am such a, I love our audience, and our audience loves Jim Santel. They're like, they're waiting. Like, when's Jim coming on? Stop talking, Crudy. Go to break, bring back Jim. We'll get there. While there's still time, though, I'd like to talk about another petulant little fight started, I think, perhaps in an effort to sort of, you know, distract from what's happening at the J6. But I'm going to play along just for today with Ted Cruz. And we've got some sound. There's new sound out that Ted Cruz takes a lot of objection to. Fancy Brian, if you'd be so kind, play the Elmo. Cut 12.
No, Daddy has super duper bandages just like Elmo.
You were super duper today, getting your COVID vaccine, Elmo.
Yeah, there was a little pinch, but it was okay. Elmo was really glad to have Daddy and Baby David there with him. Baby David, where are you?
I had a lot of questions about Elmo getting the COVID vaccine. Was it safe? Was it the right decision? I talked to our pediatrician so I could make the right choice. I learned that Elmo getting vaccinated is the best way to keep himself, our friends, neighbors, and everyone else healthy and enjoying the things they love.
Oh, Daddy! Oh, Elmo and Baby David have a question. Oh. Can we have a hug?
Oh, come here, son.
Elmo loves you, Daddy.
I love you, too.
It's okay to have questions about COVID vaccines for your kids. Get the latest facts by speaking to your pediatrician or healthcare provider.
So that was Tyrannical Elmo. If you would, Fancy, you had a comment?
Yeah, I just want everybody, if you have time, to look up what Elmo's dad looks like. If you were to take a Muppet and make Crudy a Muppet, that would be that Muppet.
Crudy is almost dead.
Got a goatee and everything.
Oh, no kidding. Damn good looking Muppet. Sexy Muppet. Sort of dad bod sexy, you know, but it's a sliding scale around here. But that's just what Elmo said. Now I got to tell you how Ted Cruz tried to pick a fight with Sesame Street and Tyrannical Elmo. He tweeted, you know, apparently hasn't caught on the whole Truth Social yet. You then have at Elmo aggressively advocate for vaccinating children under 5, according to Ted Cruz on Twitter. But you cite zero scientific evidence for this. Was it safe? Question mark. Was it the right decision? I talked to our pediatrician so I could make the right choice. Louis says in the PSA, I learned that Elmo getting vaccinated is the best way to keep himself, our friends, neighbors, and everyone else healthy and enjoy the things they love. You heard him say it, but that ain't good enough for Ted. Ted's picking a fight with Elmo because, what, the kid shouldn't be vaccinated in Ted Cruz's world. You know, his kids don't even want to be in the same country with him, right?
Right.
See if there's anything more here. Elmo super duper, blah, blah, blah. Parents have been waiting a long time. This, according to the authors of this PSA, parents have been waiting a long time to vaccinate their youngest children and protect them from the serious illness and hospitalization. The months and even years of worry have been especially hard on these families as they adjusted their activities through the pandemic to keep their children safe. COVID vaccination for this age group is one more tool. Parents now have their toolbox to keep children safe. And that was not the first time the Republican lawmaker talked about Ted Cruz objected to a Sesame Street character encouraging COVID vaccination on the children. Late last year, after fellow Muppet Big Bird, it's always Big Bird, a 6.5-year-old, 8-foot-2-inch tall yellow bird announced he had gotten a shot. Cruz slammed the news as government propaganda for your 5-year-old.
What?
Wow. Why is this guy trolling Sesame Street constantly? I think he's trying really too hard. You know what I mean? Like, if he can,
it's the
pick
war
a fight
on culture, man. You got and you point out. I mean, anything to distract from the terrible testimony and what we found out about this administration specifically yesterday, and there is going to be more to come. So yeah, I mean, you know, let's pick a fight with Elmo. Shiny objectism. Look over here.
We haven't even heard the testimony against Ted Cruz yet. Let's not forget, he was one of the original coup co-conspirators and anti-Elmo guys. Come back, James Santel, former U.S. attorney, our good friend.
They look like Muppets, and they taste like Muppets.
A snuffleupagus?
You are all weirdo.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Devils Advocates Radio Show, the Wednesday edition. We're joined right now live via Zoom by the returning champion, former U.S. Attorney James Santel. He is the host of Morning Cannolis every Saturday morning, 9 to 11, right here on the Shaw and Devil Radio. Jim, welcome back.
Glad to be with both of you this afternoon. Always a delight.
You know, thanks, Jim, I saw the people parking on stream. They're listening at their offices. They've been tuning in for you on Saturday mornings as well. I'm encouraged by that. I like when the audience cares about the issues of the day. But, you know, it's like, Dom and I don't matter. When's Jim coming on? So I hope you got something good for us, fella.
Jim Santel, I have anything you want. All sorts of things going on. And we can just pick from column A, column B, and column C and go from there.
Well, I'm going to need a Cassidy Hutchinson level appearance from you. Did you watch the testimony yesterday, Jim? I, to my humble opinion, best congressional hearing ever, ever.
at the risk of sounding much too cavalier about all of that, I fully endorse the description of one other, not you two, but one other person I also admire, said it was a jumbo-sized popcorn and double butter afternoon. So truly, truly amazing. A little bit more seriously, this is the kind of testimony that, frankly, you look to if you're putting together a criminal case, right? You've got the things in the public. We've seen a lot of that. And now you've got people coming forward to describe inside the West Wing, what's going on, who is saying what to whom, and you're getting that very granular aspect of what was happening contemporaneous with what we were seeing publicly at the same time. This is very significant, absolutely.
Jim, let's talk about the deflections and the obfuscations of the right. Starting with the criticism, this is all hearsay evidence. This is all hearsay, wouldn't be admissible in court. Jim, that wasn't my interpretation of hearsay. What's yours, sir?
No, so let's do a little bit of evidence in the afternoon here. We can always do that. All sorts of exceptions to the hearsay rule. We don't have to address all of those. But the fundamental notion is that if you certainly can describe things that you have seen and perceived that you have heard. Now, from time to time, if you will say, yes, that person told me something, yes, that sounds like hearsay. But again, many, many exceptions to that. And most critically, if we talk about a criminal prosecution of anyone, including, for example, a former president, if you're describing things that he said, if you're describing things that now a defendant who used to be the chief of staff said, those are things that do come in under admissions of party opponents. And so just the pure invocation of the evidence rules doesn't get you anywhere, certainly doesn't get you anywhere in the court of public opinion either, where thankfully those kinds of niceties, which are important in court, do not apply.
Jim, there was also arguments about the credibility of the witness. Some, I listen to Righty Whitey Talk Radio. Well, she was incorrect at least two times, and therefore everything must be discounted. I found her to be a very credible witness, Jim. And if there is some small erroneous part to her testimony, I don't think you throw the baby out with the bathwater. But how does it work in, let's say, the federal court, sir?
Absolutely. There's a wonderful instruction, Mike, that you just about codified that said, you know, if there are big things that a witness tells you and it's shown to be wrong, shown to be deceptive, shown to be inaccurate, you can discard everything else. But the small things around the edges, the timing of a conversation, small distances that do not really go to the material facts the person is describing, those should not affect credibility. The bottom line is, it is all about your own personal assessment of credibility. And that's what you look at when you look at somebody like Cassidy Hutchinson. You can also look at her demeanor, right? The way she talks. This is not somebody who plainly loves being there, right? She's not looking for the limelight here. She is plainly uncomfortable about this, but she is also clear and straightforward. This is not somebody whose credibility should be thrown under the bus. Those who are, say, the other description of her plainly are doing that for a purpose. In court, I would find her to be a very, very credible, reliable witness, even with some of the small things around the edges.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. That is James Santel, former U.S. attorney, friend of the Devil's Advocates, joining us. Jim, always good to talk to you. I was thinking about you all day yesterday, man. Okay, so, I mean, and of the most inconsequential lines of thought yesterday, I think the ketchup on the wall and, you know, trying to choke out his driver are the least important of them all. But if on any of those issues, Jim, could those folks be required to come in and give testimony either to the J6 committee or perhaps to a grand jury impaneled by the Department of Justice. Secret Service officers have done that in the past. We could address this very easily, could we not? And further on that thought, my impression from what these J6 committee members were saying seemed to imply they've already got the facts from the Secret Service. So what's your take on that, Jeff?
Right. I think your last point is the big one, right? This is another part of the regular practice of law. You don't ask a question you don't know the answer to, and you don't have reliance on what the witness is going to say. So they plainly knew what she was going to describe. There may be some small differences about how far the distance was inside the limousine, that kind of thing. Again, those kinds of things do not matter. My strong sense is that probably the J6 committee has spoken to folks. It is an issue, candidly, when you have federal agents even providing protection for the president, others coming in to testify. Generally, the agencies balk at that and they try to suppress that because you just don't want that happening on a regular basis. But here, when you have arguably a criminal prosecution that could be underway or could be investigated by the Department of Justice, which is sort of your first point, those kinds of things, absolutely. Call those agents in, call those other witnesses in before a grand jury. They do not have any immunities. They do not have any other sorts of protections from that kind of testimony. And that's why the Department of Justice, my guess, is also all over this event today that was testified about yesterday and today continuing. And so again, the factual determination about what did and did not happen on January 6th, that is a story that can very well be confirmed by others. Unlikely that Benny Thompson and others would put this in front of America without some strong confidence that this is what really happened.
Well, and so we grabbed the wheel or not, threw the dish or not. Don't care, Jim. Honestly, don't care. Not clear how that impacts, you know, the coup attempt, Jim, because what my understanding, my takeaway was he knew they were armed. He wanted them there. He wanted the police to let him pass the mags. And he didn't give a damn for 187 minutes and said that Pence deserved it. That was my takeaway, Jim. Is that in any way criminal?
Look to the big picture, right? Right. Exactly. The catch up, the wheel, those are things that we're talking about because we think about the visual aspect of those. But they're not the things that, frankly, it is not a criminal offense to grab a wheel. Might be some other problems out there with it, but that's not the focus. You've got it exactly right. One of the things that we also heard yesterday, this is a man who plainly knew the people he was talking to were armed, right? And that explains now why he had those shields in front of him, which we always thought was curious on the lips. Now we understand that because the people around him said, "Mr. President, we have got to do this." Nonetheless, he says, no, send the magnetometers away, get them in, enable them to use those weapons. And oh, by the way, my vice president effectively should be hanged. We now have the outlines for all of this. There's again, internal information. You've got the visual things from the public generally, and you can come very close, if not nailing it, to establish that this is someone who had the intent, the knowledge, the intent, the purpose of undermining and overthrowing a legitimate process of government, namely the counting of votes for the Electoral College.
Man, when you put it that way, it kind of sounds bad. Yeah. Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We have a fine guest, former U.S. attorney. He's our good friend, James Santel. Jim, Trump isn't the only one implicated by the testimony of Cassidy Hutchinson. Her old boss, Mark Meadows, he's up to his eyeballs. And he told her on what I want to say it was January 2nd, a few days before what happened at the Ellipse. And she had what walked the perhaps sober, perhaps intoxicated Rudy to the car. He was exuberant about the what was going to happen on January 6th. And she asked the boss, "Hey, Mark, Rudy says, what's going to happen?" And he said, "Cass, it could get very bad. So bad." You know what I'm saying? That to me implies that Mark Meadows knew what was coming and he allowed it to happen out of fear of the boss or whatever the case may be, but he allowed it to happen on some level. There's got to be at least civil implication by that. I mean, hell, Mark Meadows allowed people to die that day.
Right, exactly. And again, we think about what a criminal trial against people like Meadows, and I would add to that list, if I were John Eastman today, based upon what happened earlier in the proceedings. If I were Rudy Giuliani, I'd be very, very concerned about this. Why? Because once again, you've got individuals with whom you had conversations contemporaneous with and prior to January 6th. And you made statements to them that plainly reflected your own intent, again, your own knowledge. You knew what was going to happen. You purposely acted or did not act to make those things happen eventually. That is, once again, the basis for a criminal prosecution. And again, I have to believe the Department of Justice is looking at these kinds of things. You know, you do not have necessarily from Donald Trump himself, because publicly he continues to say, yes, indeed, I'm you know, doing something on behalf of the Republic. I had to ensure that the vote was proper. We don't put words right in his mouth, but so many people telling him that this was not the big steal. Plainly, he had knowledge of what was going to happen on that day, as we just described. And from that, it is not a big jump. It is not a big jump for a jury to say that, yes, indeed, there was intent to accomplish exactly what that mob accomplished. You add to it all the things that were in the public domain, you can make a very compelling case. As you can tell, prosecutor here, I would be delighted to be assigned to that trial team and work on that case.
Okay, I got one more multi-part question. Then I'll let Dom filibuster the rest for a while. First and foremost, there were U.S. senators that were part of this plan. People like Ron Johnson and perhaps complicit on a higher level, perhaps even helped drafting of the scheme to throw it back to the state legislatures or whatever the case may be, U.S. Senator Ted Cruz. Do you see criminal implication for U.S. senators in their acts if they were part of the legislative coup or the procedural coup, if you will? And what about the pardons, Jim? Cassidy Hutchinson prior had told us about 5 congresspeople seeking pardons. And yesterday she ratted out her former boss, Mark Meadows, and Rudy Giuliani for seeking pardons. Giuliani denied with the, she wasn't in the room when I sought a pardon, sort of denial. But Jim, what about the senators and what about the pardons? And
well, then let's start with the pardons. That may or may not be the easier one. Again, we know from our past discussions, what do pardons carry with them? They carry with them an acknowledgement of criminal behavior, right? That's a predicate for getting a pardon. And interestingly, of course, while it may keep you individually out of jail, if you are a United States senator or congressman and you've gotten from the president a pardon before he or one day she leaves office, it does keep you out of jail, but it doesn't prevent you from testifying, right? As a matter of fact, it strips away your capacity to raise a Fifth Amendment a privilege before a grand jury, before a trial. So you are obliged to testify. But again, fundamentally, a pardon, when you are seeking a pardon, even asking for one, it goes to intent. Absolutely.
Jim, could there be pardons that we're unaware of? Could Trump have issued pardons? Could they have pocket pardons, quote unquote?
We've chatted about this before. My own sense of process is that, well, I suppose anything could have happened under this administration, right? I never say anymore that is not impossible. There's this Office of Pardon Attorney that always is the archives, if you will, of pardons that are granted. It's got to be somewhere. There's got to be some document that you have to show the president before he left, signed this, did this. It's got to be credible, right? And so I'm still skeptical about those being out there. But again, the mere fact that they asked about pardons, to go back to your fundamental question, also conveys, can that testimony come in? Sure. Why? Because you're saying to someone, I need a pardon because I've done something criminal. That goes to intent. You know, as to your first portion of the question, yes, there's a legislative function that's administrative, that's ministerial, and then there's also a criminal function, and it's necessary to divide between those two. But just because you're in the United States Senate does not mean that you're immune from federal criminal prosecution.
Well, I like the way this answer's going. James Santel, stick around. Got more questions for you. Former U.S. Attorney, friend of the devil, Jim Santel, our fine guest. More of the Devil's Advocacy, Whopper of a Wednesday. We're getting there.
You can't obstruct a crime that was never committed. The only reason you get pardoned is you committed a crime.
The big and tall of political talk, the Devil's Advocates.
And
We are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. James Santel sticking around, former U.S. attorney friend of ours. Appreciate it, Jim, as always. I want to dovetail a little bit on that before we move on to talk a little bit about this pardon issue. Certainly unlikely, I guess, is what I'm hearing from you, Jim. But if it were to be the case that there were some sort of pocket pardons that people were holding, when would we find that out? At what point would we discover that we can't charge them with something? I mean, how would that play out, Jim?
Sure. Again, hypothetically, if there are these secret pardons out there kept in some vault in somebody's basement somewhere, what you would do, of course, is the first time that you are approached by a federal prosecutor against a federal case, right? A state does not apply to state prosecutions. And someone says to you, Mr. Santel, we're going to charge you with these crimes. If your lawyer is wise, he or she immediately says, oh, wait a minute, there is a pardon here for this specific event. It's got to be specific as to the thing you're being charged with or allegedly having been done. And then you bring it out at that point. You could do it any time, but plainly you want to stop the prosecution from the start. So the moment I would say that you are told, advised, that you are going to be charged, you would do it. Certainly, if a grand jury returns an indictment, if I were defending them and I had one of these quiet, secret pocket pardons out there, at the time of the arraignment and plea, I would stand up and say, Your Honor, my client has a document here, and it basically prohibits the further prosecution of this case. Now, what would happen, of course, next is that court would plainly take a look at it. I'm sure the prosecution would then challenge that. And that's when you get into the legitimacy. Where did this document come from? What time was it written? We need witnesses. We need to know exactly the hour, the time, the place. Where has it been for the past 2.5 years? What are the circumstances of it? There's something about it. It's got to be legitimate. Short of that, frankly, everybody, maybe not everybody, but lots of people on Capitol Hill, lots of people in the Trump ambit would right now be organizing, as they probably did with the false electors, documents that look an awful lot like a pardon, but in fact are not it. So you still have that question about legitimacy, and that's why I'm still skeptical about their being out there. Could be a possibility.
Okay, so once they're charged, and that would take some time, obviously. We don't know where any of this is at right now. We're still hearing from the J6 committee, and it could take some time for that to happen. But once they're charged, then the legitimacy of the pardon itself would be challenged. But if it's found to be upheld as a true pardon, Jim, couldn't they just say, oh, okay, well, you're pardoned for this. Now you must come in and testify because now you gave away all your Fifth Amendment rights, right?
That is precisely it. That is precisely it. Again, the pardon would need to describe exactly what this was for. The prosecution and that have got to be married up. But that means that the day after that, if I were the assistant U.S. attorney who had been confronted with this pocket pardon at the time of the arraignment and plea, I would say, all right. And I'm convinced that it's realistic. It's real. The next day, we ask the grand jury to issue a grand jury subpoena. And in that setting, you no longer have a Fifth Amendment right as to those matters. If you decide not to testify still, then you are in contempt of the grand jury, and we know where that goes. Then that's a separate criminal prosecution. So this does not get you out from under everything. It's simply, as I said, if it's real, it keeps you individually out of prison for this specific thing, the specific item, time, place that's described in that document. It's a fascinating concept.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. You're fascinated. I can tell you're listening along with James Santel, our fine guest, former U.S. attorney, friend of ours. Jim, got to ask you about the Cassidy Hutchinson testimony in regards to former White House counsel, Pat Cipollone. And Pat was adamant that the president, Trump at the time, couldn't go to the Capitol. That if he went to the Capitol, they'd be charged with every crime under the sun, basically. Trump wanted desperately, if you believe the testimony, and I do, to go to the Capitol. And I have heard it speculated. The only thing this coup attempt lacked for was Trump at the point of the coup. If Trump had gone to the Capitol, in all probability, the coup may have been successful. Jim, what's your opinion of this testimony given by Hutchinson regarding Cipollone and of course Trump's complete and utter disdain for that legal advice, because he didn't care what laws he was breaking. He wanted to successfully retain power. He wanted a successful coup, Jim.
Right. Just as a predicate to this, that had to be the most difficult job in government, being Donald Trump's White House counsel during this period. Not that we need to have pity on Pat Cipollone, but nonetheless, an incredibly difficult job. As I was listening to the testimony yesterday, I was harkening back again. You recall at the end of one of the previous hearings by this J6 committee, at the very end, Liz Cheney said, there was a brief, I don't know, two or three sentence statement by her about Pat Cipollone. And she said, you know what? He's got to come forward. He's got to tell us he is the guy who's got to come forward. And I thought that's interesting that she would add that on to this. And then the explanation for it came once again yesterday, showing to me that these people have got their act together and they know exactly what they're doing. And my other takeaway from yesterday was, again, I'm absolutely convinced that with respect to the others, even the chief of staff and others who have been around him, you've got a very strong case. I'm not indicating that Pat Cipollone himself may have some criminal culpability here, but it strikes me that he is the one person now that if he has not testified, he needs to do that. And I think that Liz Cheney and others have tweeted about that too. He needs to come forward. And not only because there's no privilege here. There's nothing here to hide behind anymore. He's got two other purposes and two other reasons for doing this. One is he's a lawyer. He has an obligation about the truth. And second, he is an American citizen and has an obligation now to tell us also what happened at the highest levels of government at a time when our government was almost overthrown. Pat Cipollone needs to come forward. He's the only remaining person I suspect that the committee is really not having it yet, has its hands around, has its hands around him right now.
Sort of Trump style, like a limousine driver.
Right, exactly.
Jim Santel, we keep pulling you back in, man. I got a few more questions for you on the other side, if you'll be generous enough to stick around. But before I let you go this hour, I had Josh Call, the Attorney General of the state of Wisconsin, on earlier this week. I asked him whether there was an active state-level investigation of the false, the fraudulent Trump electors. And he said, you know, can't talk about active investigations, but effectively, we know there's a federal investigation going on, so can't talk about it. No, it's multi-jurisdictional. We saw what Nessel had to say in Michigan, the attorney general there. She thought it broke both state and federal crimes. Jim, where do you think the appropriate place is? Should our attorney general be seeking prosecutions of the false Trump electors in Wisconsin? To your opinion, sir.
Right. And my own sense, and I think I've described this before, is that this event, this putting together documents that were not on their face conditional, even though I know that was the defense of the electors. They were told, gosh, this will only be implicated. We won't bring these forward unless indeed the entire process gets thrown into confusion here. That defense, I think, falls on its face as being ridiculous. The documents themselves are significant. They plainly were attempt to do something contrary to the best interests of our nation. They were plainly attempted to undermine this process.
Jim Santel, I'm going to put you down for lock him up. Lock him up. More of our fine guest, James Santel. The Happier Happy Hour starts right now.
Stand back and stand by.
Why don't you stop talking for a while?
Wednesday edition, and it's gotten a lot better since James Santel has joined us and generously agreed to stick around. Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney and the host of Morning Cannoli, Saturday mornings 9 to 11 on the Shaw, originating from Waukesha, played statewide on the Devil Radio, etc. If you don't have the app, go get the app. You can listen anywhere. Get the Devil Radio app. Jim, appreciate you sticking around. Obviously, it has been a murderer's row for the U.S. Supreme Court. We've had all sorts of rulings. It's not just the, you know, overturning of Roe v. Wade. Jim, there's lots of rulings. And tomorrow is Breyer's last day on the court, right? You know, the math's not going to change, but the makeup of the court about to change. So, Jim, let's start with some of the big rulings. You know, we should all be praying on the 50-yard line, apparently.
Oh, God.
Right. This is Bremerton. This is out of Seattle. And we have a football coach who is, in fact, praying on the 50-yard line, plainly a public institution, a public event in a public school. And we have his team members coming around him in that setting. This is one of those cases where the Supreme Court, as it has done in other cases, or another case just last week, consistently siding with religion and finding that the free exercise clause of the First Amendment effectively trumps, overcomes, if you will, the other portion of the First Amendment, which prohibits the establishment of a religion by a public institution. No, Congress can't make any law establishing religion viewed generally as anything public, anything of a government nature. This Supreme Court has consistently sided in favor of that free exercise right. And this is just the latest situation which that has been affirmed. John Roberts has always said that the analysis is about whether or not the action by the government discriminates against religion. And again, an awful lot of criticism for that, plenty of some people supporting it. The difficulty with that is that it doesn't really do a balancing test between the Establishment Clause and the Free Exercise Clause. And if you think about it, virtually any time that the government says, you know what, we're not going to establish a religion, we're not going to go down this road of supporting religion, there may be some level of discrimination there, right? You're going to stop a religion of some kind from doing something it wants to do. That can't be the test, and yet it is. Carson versus Macon, just last week, same kind of thing in Maine, had to do with whether or not parents of students in Maine wanting to send their students, their children, to private religious schools do in fact have the right to get state funding for that. In Maine, you can send your children to private schools if in fact the area that you're in does not have public schools. The question was whether or not you can send them to religious schools. Once again, majority of the Supreme Court, led by John Roberts, says, yes, absolutely, you can do that. Maine, you cannot prohibit parents from doing that. This is a trend that we have seen going back several years. It continues, and it raises an awful lot of other considerations out there, opening doors in all directions, as we have seen, as people have begun to think, okay, well, if in fact my religion is the primacy, the primary focus of this, and the government can't do anything to prohibit me from engaging in my religious belief, that opens up other opportunities in other areas to advocate. And so I think the Supreme Court has not only gone in the opposite direction on the cases themselves, but also given people, if you will, in other areas of social engagement and civil rights, some options here for future arguments based upon these very cases in Bremerton and Carson versus Macon just last week.
Well, some of us find ourselves as defendant for a deviltry action a couple of years ago. So Jim will let you know how it goes, this new interpretation of the Constitution. I was recently criticized, I'll call myself criticized, as a Bernie bro. You know, we didn't believe enough in Hillary Clinton, although I did vote for Clinton in the general election, not with enough enthusiasm, apparently. And Hillary didn't get to appoint, or perhaps it was the argument over Merrick Garland. But anyways, let's say I'll take credit for losing one Supreme Court seat, unfairly, unjustly taken away from Merrick Garland, never got his confirmation hearings. These rulings in probability, Jim, still would have come down 5-4. Am I wrong about that? Would the difference in the math of the court, would that have perhaps pushed Roberts back to the 5-4 majority on the other side? Or do you agree with me? It didn't matter if it was a 6-3. So many of these issues were ripe in the opinion of a Clarence Thomas.
Right, exactly. We still had an awful big group of Supreme Court justices who are going down this road already. We can't exactly say what the future would have been. Plainly, a Hillary Clinton presidency would have resulted in different people taking the bench and that sort of thing, both at lower courts and the Supreme Court. But it's a difficult thing to say. And again, I would offer that John Roberts, to your point, has always tried to find that middle ground. Look at what he did in Dobbs. He's trying to find that middle ground, both to support Roe versus Wade, but also support the state law that says 15 weeks is enough. John Roberts has always been the key here. On these religious cases, as you said, he has always voted in favor, as I said, of this exercise view. And so I tend to agree that it would not have made a huge amount of difference. But in other areas, plainly the fact that we've got these three Trump appointees now standing in the back row, if you will, in addition to the Alitos and others, that would have been problematic.
And Jim Santel, Roberts has completely lost control of this conservative court. He's not running the court anymore. The inmates are running the asylum. And the credibility of the court, at least in the opinion of the public, is plunging, Jim. People don't find this to be a credible court. And that was the case before Roe v. Wade.
Right. And you know, we've talked about this in other areas. What is the greater concern about this? The greater concern is that as people more and more, whether it's on privacy rights, abortion, the guns case, Bruin basically saying that, yes, you've got a right to carry your weapon in public. We've got two more cases coming up tomorrow in which we're probably the same Supreme Court is going to say that greenhouse gases, President Biden don't have the capacity to regulate those. Asylum, remain in Mexico, that's okay. All these kinds of things. Americans look at a court and say, you know what? You are too far afield from the mainstream. There is an argument on the other side, and you are no longer even considering that. And for that reason, I'm not going to regard you as a legitimate institution. And that is the great consequence of what we're seeing right now. These decisions themselves, hugely important for their own subject matter. But the greater issue is Americans looking at the court and saying, you're not legitimate. I don't need to do what you say. I don't need to follow what you're directing me to do. And that's when the republic begins to crumble. That's the great concern about this. And I think John Roberts perhaps appreciates this. He has lost control, but it's too late. And even with Ketanji Brown Jackson taking the oath of office sometime tomorrow, starting a new court on first Monday of October, she will replace Breyer. It is not going to change the ideological bent, if you will, of the Supreme Court. And we're going to continue to see these kinds of things for at least the remainder of the Biden term, unless something else extraordinary happens.
Legitimate institution. Jim, John Roberts started an investigation after the leak of the Roe v. Wade ruling immediately, but Ginni Thomas is still, you know, out there who wanted to clear up all the misconceptions and looks forward to talking to J6. No investigation there. The J6 wants to talk to her. And although less than 2 weeks ago, Ginni Thomas was all down for talking to J6, apparently now, her attorney says she's not going to do that. Is it important? Is it imperative for the J6 to get to the bottom of what a sitting Supreme Court justice's wife has been doing, perhaps with their shared bank account, Jim, in this communication with the coup plotters?
It is important not only for that specific person, it fills out the story, right? As she plainly was having communications with people, at least in Arizona, about the elector situation. She is part of that story. It is also important, of course, for, I think that's the predicate of your question, I would say John Roberts also has an obligation. I know justices, judges do not think of themselves as being public figures. This is so critically important to the legitimacy of his court. It still has a name on it. And if he does not, in the coming term, do something publicly to begin to establish the kinds of ethical rules to prevent a Clarence Thomas from deciding cases on the same kinds of things that his wife is advocating for, that is going to be hugely problematic. Then he is also responsible for his losing control and the further diminution of the view, the regard that the Americans have for the court. He needs to do something about that issue. If not specifically investigating, at a minimum, establishing more standards that do in fact apply at lower courts, they've got to apply to the highest justices in our country.
Jim, we just have 2 minutes left here. I want to get your take. As the J6 wrapped up their testimony yesterday, they put up some screenshots of texts received by witnesses. Apparently, Cassidy Hutchin received one of them. Is this witness tampering? Hey, you know, just so you know, President, he reads the transcripts. He knows, and we know you're going to do the right thing and be loyal. You know, those kinds of things. Is this witness tampering? I mean, what happens here, and what was the point of the J6 committee doing that right at the end, in your opinion?
Sure. Once again, it is telling the American public what's going on out there. It does, in fact, show what again? Evidence of guilt, right? You don't try to stop somebody from testifying unless, in fact, you're saying, don't tell them what the truth is, right? So that's number one. Number two, I'm going to go even further. Let's talk about obstruction of justice, right? You're not dangling pardons. The legislature can't do that. But you are, in fact, telling people, you're intimidating them, you're suggesting to them that bad things will happen if they testify. That's obstruction of justice. We saw that in the Mueller investigation, right? It's happened before. It's happening once again.
James Hintel, former U.S. attorney, host of Morning Cannolis, Saturdays 9 to 11, but not this week. Jim, take off the fourth weekend. Come back next weekend and... probably come back as a frequent flyer on the Devil's Advocates. I'm sure we'll ask you back soon, sir.
Happy 4th of July, everybody. Thanks so much. Been a great delight.
Thank you, Jim. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. We're going to go to the phone lines, open them up for you at 844-967-2789. You know, if you didn't call us right now, something bad could happen. That'd be a shame. Come back, more Devils!
Get a great effing criminal defense lawyer. You're going to need it.